Every successful person got there by going through tough times. Success is a hard-ass teacher who likes to knock you around along that journey. You know, it takes real guts to not give up and keep going. We'll hear stories about failures and how these leaders flipped the script to create success. I'm John Schultz. Join me and let's discover how success is never really overnight. So welcome to the John Schultz podcast, the myth of overnight success. I say that every time because, you know, most of my life I've been listening to stories that happened and success happened and no one ever really understood how hard it took to get there, especially when it comes to entrepreneurs. We have an amazing guest today, very excited, Chris Riccobono, the founder of Untuck It. Co-founded it with Aaron Sinandres, a Columbia Business School classmate in 2011, pioneered the concept of designing shirts specifically tailored for a neat, untucked look. Thank God, because the minute that you did that, I ran to however I could get it. I know Leo DiCaprio went to a store for 3 hours. It was online there. I stayed online for 3 hours and tried to get every model I possibly could. So happy you created this. You were backed by $30 million in venture capital and led to the famous television commercial, which we love. Went to 90 retail locations. You know, obviously you had a journey with the brand, all these challenges we're going to talk about. What I do love about you is you formed the Riccobono Academic Resilience Faculty Fellowship, so their mini grants program, and it supports Providence College, where you went. I love that, for mental health elements and strategies and courses and raising awareness and in today's day and age that is so necessary. And like a true entrepreneur, you're starting Greatness Wins, which we'll talk about. I don't know how you're doing another one, but there you go. You're doing it. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. If you see me looking around, it's because I have 4 kids under 5, so I'm always worried they're going to show up out of nowhere.
Going back to your early years, little Chris, so where were you originally from and how would you describe yourself growing up?
I grew up in Franklin Lakes, New Jersey, played a lot of sports. That was kind of my focus. I started playing tennis at a young age, ended up playing tennis through college. I had a great upbringing. My dad was a doctor, had 2 sisters. I was probably always a little bit of a worrier, which kind of, I think, translates into today still. I'm kind of an entrepreneur. I think entrepreneurs always tend to be worrying a little more. So I was always thinking about what am I going to do in life. I was worried about that even at a young age because I was never the smartest guy in my class, and it was just something that was on my mind that I know a lot of young kids don't think about, that I was thinking about, you know, in high school, of what job am I going to get? Because my dad was a doctor, so a lot of people do what their parents do, or they go in that direction. And being a doctor had changed, and my dad was kind of advising against that. So I was saying, well, what am I going to do? Go into finance, which is what everyone from our area, Bergen County, goes into. And I didn't have the connections that my friends had. So I just think as a young age, I was always like, where am I going to end up? What am I going to do? But like I said, I spent most of my time playing sports, soccer, basketball, tennis, and I continued, went to Don Bosco Prep, and played tennis there for 4 years, and then went on to Providence College and played there for 4 years.
So is that a D1 tennis school or?
Yeah, it was. Yep.
Okay. So that's good. Listen, I love tennis. We got the US Open coming. It's one of my favorite events of the year. It's such a great sport. So, all right. So, you know, your doctor came from a, you know, family. Your father was a doctor. So what childhood experience do you think contributed to the entrepreneurial mindset that you have today? Did sports help that? Like, was it learning how to go into a grind and stay there, learning how to, you know, fail and not, you know that you wanted to succeed at a sport? Did that help you?
Yeah, I mean, I played an individual sport, which I think teaches you a lot because, I mean, I also played soccer and basketball, but when I started to just take up tennis, it's kind of a lonely sport. You know, you're out there, you don't have your teammates with you. And that's the same thing about entrepreneurialism. It's a lonely journey as you're trying to make things happen. So there's definitely some similarities there. I just was never I was scared of corporate America. I didn't like to, you know, first of all, I didn't like the public speak, and that was always on my mind. And I didn't like being in the spotlight. I wanted to go do my own thing. I remember in college, I was talking to my dad, and I just said, I'm scared to go into corporate America and to have to act a certain way with different bosses and, you know, shave every day and do all these things that I wasn't really built for. So I think, and I always wanted to, you know, I knew that I would work a lot harder if I loved what I was doing, and I was willing to work all day, literally all day, but it had to be on something I wanted to do. So
did you feel the difference with that, with the three sports, right? You picked tennis, obviously.
Yep.
I mean, obviously you're an athlete, right? So you had natural ability on a lot, and you don't really know how far you're ever going to get in any of them, but is that what made you decide that?
You never know. I mean, looking back from the sports side of things, I wish I had played all sports through high school. I think a lot of kids, they end up, you forget that the odds of you going pro are very small.
Right.
So looking back, I love soccer. I wish I had played soccer, but tennis is a bit, pretty big commitment. And, you know, I was focusing on that. I get pretty addicted to something when I get into it, whether that's was tennis or just, you know, from an Nantucket perspective. I had tried, I mean, I'm kind of jumping all over here, but I had tried so many ideas. And when I graduated college, like I said, I knew I did not want to go into finance. And that's where everyone was going into in 2001. Or 2000, when you kind of think about where you're going. Obviously, 9/11 had a little bit of an impact on everything. But I also knew that you can't just be an entrepreneur. I think that's an important lesson I'm always teaching younger guys. Like, that's not a job opportunity. It's not like, oh, I'll go into finance or I'll become an entrepreneur. You become an entrepreneur, you need a lot of luck and you need that idea. So you have to continue to pursue other pathways while you're hoping to become an entrepreneur. So in my mind, and I know this isn't the exact question he asked, but in my mind, I said, let me pursue a career with flexibility that would allow me to work on my ideas, more than if I had a 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. finance job. So that's kind of how I decided but I was always thinking kind of, what am I going to do next to hopefully one day become an entrepreneur? But I didn't have an idea at the time. So you can't just be an entrepreneur if you want to be one.
No, and you did that. I mean, listen, you're very busy doing your work and, you know, being an athlete in college. You got out, right? And then you, I guess you got a job. What was your first job? I know you tried to start some startups early on. I guess Love for the Little People and Pardon the Vine.
L4LP.com. Everyone laughs at that one, but it was actually a great idea. First dating site for little people, but it didn't go anywhere. But no, I was going to be I became a pharmaceutical rep because I knew there was tons of flexibility. It's a decent first year salary, right at when you get out of college. And I knew that it would allow me a few years to work on things, you know, during the day while I was, you know, on these sales calls. But what I wanted to do was continue to progress as I wasn't able to come up with an idea. And I was so young back then. I got a job at GE Healthcare to eventually sell medical equipment, and I joined their technical sales and leadership training program. Right when I got into that, I spent all of the time in the technical sales and leadership training program studying for my GMATs with a goal to try to get into Columbia Business School, which was well above my intelligence level. But I was thinking, how can I figure this out? Because I figured if I got into there, it would buy me a little more time. And then if I wasn't able to think of an idea, then I would maybe switch back. At that point, I was thinking about going back into finance, but with an MBA. So I took my GMATs, I applied to Columbia, just had a great interview, got waitlisted, and somehow got in. I still to this day don't know how. But that allowed me to actually, funny enough, that's where I met Aaron, my partner. A lot of people can't decide whether going to getting your MBA, even at a top school, actually does anything. I think in the world of finance, these guys don't really care, but they always say that networking is one of the great reasons to do it. So I met Aaron there, and I came out in 08, still with no ideas, and started to panic a little bit because I was getting older. I was probably 28 years old. Started interviewing for hedge funds at the bottom level, like the $35,000 a year, you know, with guys who were 30 and would have been guys who were 25 and would have been my boss. And luckily in 08, the market crashed. So I did not get a job there. And I was a little bit, I was getting nervous because, you know, looking back now, I was 28. I had a long time ahead of me, but you start to get nervous, as you know, as you're getting older. And I had one passion, which was collecting wine. And I tried all these other ideas, writing reality TV scripts, a few consulting jobs in healthcare, the L4LP, and a number of other ideas, and nothing was going anywhere. So I said, let me try to, at the time, there was a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk, who's pretty well known by everyone now. No one was filming things 15 years ago. Now every single thing is filmed. So I thought he was a little bit over the top. I said, let me do something that's a little more relaxed, like my personality, and try to get, wine can be an intimidating area for a lot of younger people. I said, let me try to relate to them, you know, with a hat on and, you know, casual clothing, and teach them about what I think you need to know about wine. And so I did that. I filmed myself every day. I started traveling around the world, meeting with winemakers. It was a lot of fun. I did some consulting, but there was no way for me to turn it into something big. So what that did was that allowed me to learn how to market, you know, use Facebook. It just came out, you know, marketing on Facebook had just come out. It learned that I could actually make a website, because most entrepreneurs with great ideas, they don't do it because they're scared of how am I going to do it? I don't know how to do a website. I don't know how to market. I don't know anything about any of that, you know. And the bottom line is you can learn all this. We're in this incredible period of time where we have the internet now, which we didn't have 20 years ago or 25 years ago. And you can learn how to do everything. So I said, it's time. I'd always thought about a shirt, that my shirts were too long. You know, that's it. People always ask me, why did I do it? I needed a shirt. So I was in Las Vegas. I had a J. Crew small on. I don't wear a small. It was out of spec. And I wore it for 3 nights in a row. And it was perfect fitting shirt, because every time I put on another shirt, it fell down, you know, below my fly. So I'd always thought about this. And then finally, after doing Pardon That Vine, I was like, I can actually do this. I can figure it out. So I began to develop the idea, started working. I went into the fashion district, wandered up and down the streets with my J. Crew shirt, would go into places and say, can you replicate this? Can you make this shirt? And it was much, I thought it was going to be easy. And these guys don't want to work with new startups. And you need something called a tech pack, and you need all this stuff. But I was pretty persistent, and I finally got them to make a few samples. Around that time, I called Aaron up and I said, hey, what do you think of this idea? And he tells a story that he was in an airport in Boston. I'll never forget, because he said, I've had the exact same problem. And I called him about 50 other ideas where he would hang up the phone on, say, I'm not interested. So I started socializing the idea to all my friends, and everyone's face would light up that they had 20 shirts in their closet. And I remember this was a time when 5 days a week you were wearing a dress shirt, and 2 days a week you were wearing a casual shirt, because everyone was going to work 5 days a week. Everyone was dressing up. If you went to a restaurant, you dressed up. They'd say, you know, I have 25 shirts in my closet. I can wear one untucked, right? Which is typically an out of spec shirt. Or they go get them fixed at the tailor. But getting a shirt fixed at the tailor is 50% chance that it's going to work. It's either going to be too short, too wide. So it was amazing, the excitement, but I always thought it must exist. These guys aren't dumb. Polo, J. Crew, like Brooks Brothers, they've been doing it. Why would they not just make this shirt, right? So easy in my mind. But anyway, I was getting desperate. I said, let me just do it. So I went to try to raise money, and you can imagine going to an older, wealthy guy and explaining that you want to launch a company that's got a shorter shirt. You know, number one, they didn't get it. Number two, they kind of laughed at it. So we only raised $150,000 from basically my friends, $5,000 increments. Can't do much with $150,000 when you launch a company that you need to build and then market and buy inventory. So Aaron came on we both had full-time jobs. We worked, you know, around the clock. We set up shipping in Hoboken. We go to a storage unit. We started by shipping out of my apartment, and every day the boxes would grow. The neighbors would get more annoyed, you know, asking me what I was doing.
Wait, but at this time, you're still at your GE job, right?
Yeah, I'm full-time at GE.
And you're in sales for that, right? So, and before we keep moving forward, the impact of knowing how to sell as an entrepreneur, I think, is like, if you can't sell your own product, I know it's all the trials and tribulations of getting it made. What do you think the impact was of learning how to be a salesperson before you actually started your own product?
Yeah, I mean, sales is the most, everyone's in sales. I don't care if you're a doctor or a lawyer. So sales is, I think, the most important skill set. It's funny, the reason I was able to continue to do so well at GE was because I became, my sales strategy was become friends as opposed to being kind of a sales rep. And I'd go in them and talk, I go in there and talk about my Untuckit journey that I was doing on the side, and they relate, they, as opposed to an annoying sales rep who came in there pushing an MRI on them, they just became interested in talking about Untuckit, and they knew that I would, that's what I would be doing. But when they wanted to buy, you know, they bought through me because we became friendly. But yeah, sales is, even to this day, every second of my life, I'm legitimately selling, right? To this day, you know, even after 12 years of Untuckit. Now I'm starting over with GW, but.
But that's why I think it's so important to know what you are. Like, yep. Like, because you may be the greatest idea person on the planet, but if you don't have the ability to be a salesperson, you know, I don't even call it sales. It's like getting someone to believe in what you're doing, the idea that you're presenting. It doesn't go. It just, it dies on the vine, right?
I agree, 100%. Yeah, they have to see your passion, and that's when they're willing to invest in you.
All right, so here you are, you're doing, and what I thought was interesting about your story, you know, the Warby Parker guys, they also did not quit their day job until they felt they had enough traction to move on. Like, everyone thinks you have to just, like, throw everything away that you're doing. And so tell us your thoughts on... Yes. Like, how did you get through having a part, they're called side hustle now, right?
Well, it's like, defined, it's the, like I said, going back to, you can't become an entrepreneur, like, that's not a job. So you, anyone who ever asks me, I say you cannot, first of all, if you have a job, you don't have to pay yourself. There's less stress and risk. You can last 2 years longer by not paying yourself. I'm paying myself $100,000 a year, $50,000 a year over 3 years. If Aaron and I did that, you know, over 4 years, it took us about 4 years to take off, we would have been minus $600,000 or $500,000. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the stress would become overwhelming. I mean, if it's, you're going to fail or you're out of a job on the street, that no one wants to be in that position. So, but you, at the flip side, you have to be willing to work 20 hours a day. I mean, you just, but I used to get up so excited to work, do Untuckit stuff. I didn't even want to get out of bed to do GE stuff. It just didn't excite me. So, but you cannot, you got to keep your job. Now, listen, I understand if you're in derivative sales for Goldman Sachs, you're not going to be an entrepreneur, right? And that's, so you got to plan this. Like, if you really want to give everything you have into trying to be an entrepreneur, number one, you want to start as, if you can, before you have kids, of course, you know, that's another issue. And number two, you want to, because you just don't have the time, because you need to be working 20 hours a day. And number two, you want to keep your job. So that's, young entrepreneurs don't think about that. They come out of college and say, oh, I want to be an entrepreneur. But, you know, no, very few people make it. So you have to be able to fail and fail and fail and have income coming in while you're failing. So,
and knowing that it's going to happen when it's supposed to, if you keep going, right? I mean,
yep.
Yes, you're going to have to hit certain market cycles, but an idea is an idea. Normally, it's something that is not there, right? So, like, it's not like you're rushing because someone else is doing it. You're working on your own. All right, so you're doing both. What was the moment where you had to say, you know what, I'm all in. Like, I can't do both anymore.
It dragged on for a while because I was under the impression that I'll just hang around until they push me out, as opposed to I would leave. But it got to the point. So anyway, let me just take a step back. So we, in 2014, we launched in 2011. We were doing whatever, $500,000 in sales. But it was frustrating because the product was horrible the first 2 to 3 years. I didn't know how to make the shirts. The buttons fell off. It shrunk in half. You'd read reviews that people would use it to wash their car, like as a rag. But I had to learn. I didn't know all these things that if I knew, I would have never done it. And no one educated me on it. But there was still this unbelievable excitement when people found out about the brand, where they would send paragraph emails about how they wish they did it. So we were like, there is something here. So in 2014, we said, let's just spend the rest of the money marketing. We had not marketed $1. We just had PR. So we were growing incredibly slow. And we called up Boomer and Carton's radio station. It was the only thing we could afford was radio. And they said, listen, it's going to take a 3 months, you know, $100,000 or whatever. And we said, we have 2 weeks and $21,000, you know, that's it. So, and we did it. I remember sitting in a hotel in LA at the time and literally $400 live radio read, and 2,000 people came to the site and bought, and it was incredible. So then we expanded, and we did, the only thing we could afford after that was an airline magazine. No one in the world was in an airline magazine except watch companies and cologne companies. That's changed because of us. Oh, since then.
Dramatically changed since.
So yeah. we put this thing in there, and everyone is seeing it. You know, we spend $15,000, make $45,000. Spend $15,000, and we sold out of shirts in 2014. Literally sold out of them. So we had to make them in the USA for $60 a shirt the next year. And the shirts once again were horrible because they can't produce, you know, volume and quality in the US. People think you can, and they always get annoyed, but over Asia is Vietnam, even China, they have the best quality out there, better than Europe. And people don't realize that, but, cause they have the processes down and the latest technology, but that's a different conversation. So in that year we said, I want to say we did 3 million, and the next year we got off to a great start, and I was flying to a sales meeting, and my picture was in the airline that everyone was on the plane, you know, with Untuckit. People like got a little bit of wind. Oh, he's doing something stupid. He must be, you know, he's doing something on the side, small, like starting, you know.
Right. And you're like, picture on, oh, that's too funny.
Yeah, you know, when I landed there, it was kind of like I left the meeting. My boss was like, I think it's time because I was telling him it was my wife's company. I was the face of the brand. I mean, I was trying everything. But so I hung on a while. 2015. We opened our first pop-up in Soho because 70% of men would not buy the product without touching and feeling it. People thought brick and mortar was going away. We knew it wasn't because of all these requests. So we opened up Soho. I worked there every day, full day as a sales rep to try to get understanding the customer. And we had just an incredible 3 months. People came in, they'd hug me. It was bizarre. You know,
it's funny because like, I so do not like tucking my shirt in. Like I bought as much as I could, but I know for me, when I went into a kiosk in the mall, when you did those pop-ups, it changed how many I would buy.
Yeah.
Because I actually felt like I could see it. I could like put a bunch on, because you know, every style is a little different too, right? That was smart. That was very smart.
We saw things that you don't typically see, men getting excited to shop. You'd see, we searched Scotch in the stores and guys would gather around and I would just listen in and they'd be like, you know, this is the greatest shirt, you know, there's so much excitement, which typically men didn't have. But what we did was we tapped into something that allowed you to just put on a shirt, look good without overthinking it. And every guy who's not in fashion, we are not a fashion forward company. Most guys are not fashion forward. And even these guys like your friends who say they don't care about how they look, they do. Everyone cares about how they look. We learn that through surveys and it's important to them. Like it's, I know, joke around that people would hug me. Like it, looking good, it boosts your confidence, which makes you do better, you know, in life. And we've heard all, I'm not making this up. These are like surveys we've sent. And
yeah.
And so it was really an important thing. And these guys loved it. They could buy one, try it on. Sorry. They could try on one and they'd buy 10 because they now have, and then in that the world's going, the world's going more casual. Yeah, and then the world's going more casual at the perfect time where you now could go to La Bernardin in New York City in an untucked shirt. You know, that all changed. And then, you know, kept getting more casual. So it was kind of the right time, too.
So what were your biggest challenges? I mean, obviously online, you had to learn it from scratch. You were so early, right? Like, I mean, you mentioned Gary Vaynerchuk. I mean, he was so early in what he was doing, too. What were some of the online challenges? And then now that you saw what a store did, I'm in real estate, right? So, you know, from the halo effect of having a store, having online, you know, from the beginning where there maybe was 5% online sales compared to brick and mortar, it's changed to 20. But what were the issues you had becoming, you know, a brick and mortar online store?
Well, as far as online, we were like the second company after Bonobos for men's apparel, direct to consumer. You know, there was no blueprint at the time. Now there's a blueprint, which I know with Greatness Wins, or if an entrepreneur asks me, back then we were learning Facebook marketing. And at the time it was great for us because there was very little competition. today, acquiring a customer on Facebook or Instagram is very expensive and very hard. There's so much, so many competitors. Back then, we took off because we didn't have all that competition, although we were learning how to do it. You know, we did all sorts of marketing that typically brands don't do, like at our size. We were doing TV early on. We were doing radio, you know, newspapers. We were in the newspaper, New York Post, Wall Street Journal. All old, what people were talking about, no one, there's everyone's doing digital, and we kept going with all these different ways, and everyone would see us. So it worked for us. The challenge, and then brick and mortar, the problem with brick and mortar, it becomes very complicated. It's like, you know, you now have 500, we opened 10, like three store, one store, five stores, 35 stores, and 35 stores, something like that. A lot bigger headcount, you know, back then, it wasn't as fluid between online and stores. Now it is, you know, now you can pick up in stores, return in stores. So all of that we were learning on the fly. I mean, we're not fashion guys, myself or Aaron. So even the guys who would come in to work for us, they'd be like, you guys are crazy. This isn't how you do things. Like, you know, because we were kind of creating our own way of doing things differently than what these old school brands had done.
Yeah, because you had no fashion experience. So like, it's amazing. Like every odd was stacked up against you. But what was so interesting is you succeeded because you did everything in a different way. Like you didn't actually follow the exact method.
Yeah, I think we fixed a lot of issues. Like I'll give you one example. These stores, if you look at the bigger brands, most of their stores are like 4,000 square feet. They're beautiful mahogany oak or whatever it may be. And, you know, they have 300 stores. We said a few things. One, our stores don't need to be between 1,200 and 1,500 square feet, no bigger. Two, guys don't care, very different than women. They don't care what the store looks like. They're not looking up at the beautiful woodwork or they want to go in and have an easy process and potentially a glass of scotch. That glass of scotch is a lot more intriguing to them than, you know, spending $1 million on a build out. So we spent very little on a build out. So our stores are all profitable. That's not the case with the competition, but that was just doing things a different way, not focusing on beauty, focusing on the process of shopping with us, which is very easy. We have try-on shirts. We have an iPad. You walk up, you pick, you try on your shirt, you pick your shirts, you have a glass of scotch if you want it, and you leave.
I don't even want to carry things around with me when I shop. So like the fact that I can actually go in, look at the iPad and like send it to my house.
Yeah.
I don't want to carry anything. Yep. So it's pretty cool.
So it was just a different way of doing things. And we also knew that you can't, you can have 140 stores, but you don't need 300, right? Like because they eat into, so we learned a lot, you know, with what had gone wrong in men's fashion beforehand. And then we started expanding product. Everyone wanted polos that were shorter. You know, everyone wanted a sweater that fit with their untucked shirt untucked, the sports jacket that fit with their, and then pants really has no connection other than people trust our quality and their experience. So we started growing pants.
Yeah. Once you're there, why not? Right.
Yeah. Or pants is our fastest growing product right now, funny enough, out of everything. Now, you know, I don't know, I don't want to speed it up too fast, but we were, just to talk about the journey of an entrepreneur, everything was going right. We had a massive year in 2019. Every single company out there copied us, which was the most flattering from achievement perspective, that we said, wow, we started this out of our house as a sales rep at GE, and now the companies have been around for 50, 60, 70 years, have changed their whole strategy. J. Crew had an Untuck It weekly call. It was called Untuck It. And it was Mickey Drexler yelling at his employees as why we were growing, you know, and able to sell shirts in our stores. And then you'd go J. Crew, Gap, Banana Republic, Brooks Brothers, Vineyard Vines built out a section, shirts meant to be worn untucked. Now, Vineyard Vines, that's not an untucked guy, right? That's a tucked in guy.
Totally. But,
and luckily, we were scared, but we had already had our brand. People think of like just like a tissue or a Kleenex or a Xerox and copy machine. An untucked shirt is called an untuck it to most people.
Well, listen, how important that's the genius. Untuck it. Like you don't have to explain it. The minute you hear it, you know what it is. Like, but how did you come up with that name?
The best decision I ever made. It's the difference between being here today and having never, you know, I would have been, if it was Chris Riccobono's shirts or something like that, everyone said that we were idiots and we weren't sophisticated enough. It should be in cursive and it's got to be a really high-end name. Untuck It is the best you hear people would talk about it. They wouldn't forget it. It's now, if you, someone's wearing a J. Crew untucked shirt, I say, I saw an untucked. It wasn't even an untucked. It was an untucked shirt, right? So it's, and we are, what's happened now, just so you know, all these brands that in 2019, everyone was being overvalued because it was all about growth. It wasn't about profitability. And these brands would be doing $50 million in sales and get an $800 million valuation, or $150 in sales and get a $4 billion valuation. And all those brands are struggling like you wouldn't believe today, because at the end of the day, they weren't brands. They were fads. They were untuck it. And I'm not saying this arrogantly, but untuck it is a brand. It's memorable. It's known. It's not going anywhere. No one's replacing it, because even if you copy it, you're going to be using our name when you're selling it. So it's amazing that untuck it, just that strange name, and shirts designed to be worn untucked must have taken a year to come up with. If you're into marketing, you know that that type of stuff really matters. And so untuck it, shirts designed to be worn tucked, is just such a catchy phrase.
It's used like in bylaws, like you can wear an untuck it, like to a golf club. There's a lot of courses who do that.
Yep.
It's like nuts. It's like, they don't say you can wear your shirt untucked. They say you can wear an untucked type shirt. So
yeah, it was the best thing that we did.
I think that's the most amazing. I mean, the name to me is brilliant. All right, so yeah, you were talking about, obviously, COVID was coming.
Oh, yeah, so we were about to sell in 2019. We had 15 letter of intents coming in. Sorry, 2020, February 27th, 15 letter of intents coming in for a pretty big number. And we had to shut down the process. And by April or May of 2020, we were on the phone with bankruptcy attorneys because we were going to have to go bankrupt. So it was all, the dream was over. Like, we never sold. We had taken some money off the table. We did raise money one time. We took money off and put it on from Kleiner Perkins. And it was very rare that you'd only put we put $8 million on the books by 2019. The equivalent companies like a Bonobos had $200 million on. So we were operating very efficiently. It had worked out, but when Corona came, you needed to be cash rich, and we weren't. And we had just opened 35 stores in 2019. So there was not everything we had done right and were doing right. It didn't matter. It was over. Like, we were bleeding cash. And then it wasn't that people always said, well, why didn't you still do good online? Because people were wearing T-shirts.
No one was going out.
They weren't wearing button-down shirts. We survived by people buying our polos and tees like this one. But you still couldn't grow. And, you know, it was, so we owed more money than you can imagine. Our debt went through the roof. And the guy said, you have to declare bankruptcy. I was like, what happens if I do that? He's like, you don't own anything and they're going to walk you out of your office. You know, so that was bad, to say the least. And I just bought a new house. So I was like, this is incredible. And I was like, there was no solution. Like, it's not usually there's a solution with
what,
Corona.
How many years in?
7 years in. Yeah. Eight years in.
But the funny thing
is, every time you turn on the news in the morning, it was like, we don't know if this is ever going to end. Remember, it got to that point. Like, is it so what? It was unbelievable.
Like,
and it was crazy because
it's terrible.
I wouldn't even, you know. So anyway, we called all our vendors, our landlords, our, you know, 85 land or 80, or wasn't 80 landlords because you had the big malls. And then we called all of our factories and we said, guys, we will be the best brand coming out of Corona because we are a casual shirt where you can still look good. And we were the fastest growing men's apparel brand before it happened. And we are going to open more stores. You know that many companies are dying right now. You know, all these companies were declaring bankruptcy. J. Crew declared bankruptcy. Brooks Brothers declared bankruptcy. You've got to hang with us. And everyone was great except one landlord. Everyone was amazing. And they let us push out our payments and we survived. And then last year, we had our best year ever. We became profitable. And we were able to do what no one's able. If you're an entrepreneur and direct-to-consumer brand, you try to do one thing. At some point, you need to convert the ability. You need to lower marketing spend and still grow. Because once you lower that marketing spend, that's the only way to get profitable. And the question is, are you going to die or is your growth going to go down? And for some reason, ours kept going with massive reduction in customer acquisition cost. And that's because we were known and the referrals went way up. So here we are today. Listen, if you've been through Corona, and I'm sure your business was impacted.
Well,
everyone,
listen, we own shopping set. I mean, no one's fault, right? It was the first time where no one caused it.
I know.
Like, it wasn't the financial crisis where people were doing loans that they should, like. So
just
if you had to all work together as a team, I think, from your finance, your owners, you know, landlords, like, so everyone did the best they could.
Yeah.
And that's why we
and
all
these poor restaurants that were around forever, all, you know, these great ones in New York City, there wasn't a choice. And, you know,
we tried to help as many people as we possibly could help. You know, obviously you can only go to a certain extent. Sometimes people, they just were not going to be able to get through it, but you know, you all retails, 100% revenue to zero revenue in one day. I mean, like, when does that ever happen?
It's
right?
Crazy. Well, we used to joke around, like, when we were meeting with investors in 19, we said, what's the worst? We got to be prepared against a recession. What's the worst thing that can happen? Well, the worst thing that can happen is cut us by 20% if you want, right? Like, but there was never a scenario in life where you'd say, well, our stores are going to close. That wasn't even in, you wouldn't give that as a worst case scenario. That wasn't a work, you know. So it was just incredible, and we survived. But now, as an entrepreneur, and you know this, you got to, I can't sit here and celebrate, because who knows, until this thing's sold, who knows what'll be next year, right? Now we have the financial impending crisis, which is already impacting, you know, customers because of the recession and the inflation.
Well, it's just rates are higher, right?
Rates are high.
Capital's more.
But that being said, we are doing very, very well. We should double our EBITDA this year. We're growing. We're going to start going into wholesale. We've never done wholesale. So very rare that a company our size doesn't do wholesale. We're going to expand into wholesale. We're going overseas. We have deals in the Philippines and Mexico. I should say we did open in London right before the pandemic. We opened a few stores in London with a guy named Kevin De Bruyne, who is, I think, one of the best soccer players in the world for Man United, Man City. So we had some great momentum there. It got stopped because of Corona, but we'll be, you know, focusing on that again. And there's just so many opportunities, licensing, because people want to work with us now.
Totally. Because you're well, a brand name. What's so cool too about, and I think, you know, what I've learned in my career, our underwriting assumptions are only so right until they're not, because we can't ever know what unforeseen could happen. It's just not being afraid to know you can get through it, and always believing it will work out the way it should, right? Which is obviously what happened to you. You know, coming out through it, you're growing now internationally. The brand is a major household name brand, which is unbelievable, from being a GE sales rep to finding out, like, what everyone thought they needed, right? Like, you don't know what you need until you think about it. Yeah. And I love what you say about, you know, to be an entrepreneur, find something you feel you need.
Exactly.
And, like, go after it. Like, like your passion. That's, you're going to want to fix it, right? How did that help you through all this?
Well, they always say, I used to always think, the ideas I would think of are like, what do I need? I used to just sit there. What do I need? What do I need? And some of them, they were, you know, not something that you could scale. But most of the time, if you need something, I always say, I say this to entrepreneurs too, in this day and age, the world is different now. Everyone has the opportunity to be an entrepreneur, like we talked about. In the old days, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you needed $1 million. You had to open up a store. You had to get a billboard, right? Like, what, or buy, like, there was no other way. Now you can go online, create an account, market to test it on TikTok and all these other Instagram.
You got Shopify now. You got all these tools.
You have Shopify, but what you do need is, you need a difference. You need a hook. You can't just say, I'm making these really nice t-shirts and I'm going to sell. And I can't tell you the amount of people who call me and say that. And I'm very honest. I said, listen, if you don't have a hook, if you don't have a story to tell, you're not going to survive. You can't just make a really nice t-shirt. There's too many nice t-shirts. You can't just make you need a great marketing story to tell the consumer that's going to grab their attention.
I agree. So, all right. So you do this, and thank God you're still around. I actually, even if I can't find something that I like from your store, a brand, I make my own Untuckits now. So it's amazing how, you know, all the people that do sewing and fix shirts today are going to do a lot better in the future as well. But now you got it going. Like, what makes you start a whole nother thing? Like, this Greatness Wins. By the way, I love that name, because you don't really understand what it is. So you'll want to read about it and find out what it is, which I think is cool. Like, why do this at this point in your career? You have 4 kids, you got a whole good thing going on. What made you do it?
Yeah, I had some time over the pandemic, because we were closed essentially and there wasn't a lot going on, and I always need something to keep me excited, and I get bored very easily. So Untuckit was struggling along, and we were, you know, I just had more time that I wasn't leaving the house. And so I was just thinking, what's something else I could disrupt? You know, what What's an area that I could go into that, that I see another issue in the clothing space, which is now where I'm comfortable working in. And I bought a lot of, I bought like 50, 60 pairs of athletic shirts and shorts from all the big companies, from all the athleisure companies. And what I learned was that the bigger companies' quality just wasn't there. They don't, they have too many factories. They're not doing quality control the way you need to. I confirmed that with the factories who make all these products. And the athleisure companies, which I loved because I wore some of them to hang out in, they weren't meant to work out in. And you could tell the types of fabrics were all about how you look and not the combination of looking good and working out. So there was no high-end true athletic apparel brand. Greatness Wins, once again, same story with UNTUCKit. I had a got attacked for that name. People didn't like it. It's like, it's not even a name of an apparel company. Greatness Wins. It's a word. And I said, that's exactly why I want it. People are going to find it strange. They're going to hear it. They're going to Google it. They're going to remember it. And it has a meaning beyond for the youth who hopefully get into the brand, that Greatness Wins, right? And I thought, all right, I need a few great athletes tonight. So those are my first differentiators. Now, I wanted more because you need storytelling so important. So I said, originally I was working with, Drew Brees and Wayne Gretzky were investors and partners at UNTUCKit. And I went to them. They were two of the best ever. And I wanted a third. So I said, is there a better guy than Derek Jeter, right? One of the most respected athletes on and off the field. He's also an entrepreneur. He's a smart businessman. Had done a ton at Nike. Had the most best-selling sneaker outside of basketball ever. But I thought it was going to be impossible because he doesn't do a lot of brand. He didn't do a lot of deals then. But I went after him, and he wanted to be really involved. He didn't want to be just a name. He wanted to be a daily, you know, phone call, meetings, and have a say in what was happening. Eventually, Drew fell through for a variety of reasons. So Derek, myself, and Wayne launched it, and we wanted a female. So Derek loved Misty Copeland because she's in a unique sport, ballerina.
My daughter's danced her whole life. She loved,
she's
it's a huge market.
Yep.
That sport.
Yeah, so. It's great. So we launched, and we launched a year ago, and it's doing really well. We're now making a huge push into golf, like we discussed, because people love a new brand with a story, you know, at these golf courses. So we're going to be doing that over the next few years. We're going to be launching a sneaker, our women's launch in October. So it is a really exciting brand. It is a competitive area because you have these massive athleisure brands now, like the Lululemons, but you also have the massive athletic brands. So it's not easy, but it's really fun to try to.
You got to make sure it's a don't pill. The collars don't get all screwed up when you're sweating all the time in them.
Don't
it's
pill.
Amazing. Like I didn't think about what you were saying until I'm thinking about what I wear and all the little things that I am noticing that I wish didn't happen. Actually,
don't pill. Don't shrink. Don't and consistent fit. That's one of the craziest things for both brands. When I ordered 10 J. Crew shirts 15 years ago, there was this much of a difference between the exact same shirt, exact same size. When I ordered the athletic brands, there was even a bigger difference. You'd wear a pair of shorts would have a 6-inch difference, same size. As a consumer, that used to drive me crazy because if I bought a t-shirt like this and I said, I love this, I'd go to the store, buy more, and it would be a different fit. So consistency of fit is such an important...
Especially online.
Differentiation.
I hate return, right? I mean... Yep. When you like something, you buy a lot of it.
You want it to fit the same, right?
Yes.
It looks the same.
Yeah.
So so it's pretty exciting. And I have a great view on both industries now because I'm in the more, you know, UNTUCKit and the athleisure. So now I'm covered for another pandemic. And you learn a lot. Like I learn a lot about both brands that help each other's brand because
I just don't understand how you, like, what makes you want to go through the pain and agony? Cause like how many times did you feel UNTUCKit was out of business? Like once a month,
crazy. Just a quick note of it. Being an entrepreneur is there is so much pain. It's funny, but my partner who I brought on for Greatness Wins, I told him that I said, listen, there's going to be so much unhappiness. Like we are going to one step forward, two steps back, one step forward. The product comes and it's out of spec and you can't sell it or all the buttons fall off or, you know, you're working with it's just, and that's what happened with UNTUCKit. But I always tell the young entrepreneur, like, you need to embrace that. because it may, everyone says this, but it's really true. It makes the success 50,000 times better knowing how much pain. So I do, at times I'm like, why did I do this? Especially with four kids under five. And there are times I get very depressed about it because I'm in it now. Because I am back to square one with Greatness Wins. I mean, I'm operating like it was on Tucket in 2011.
It's amazing. I had on the founder of Waze. He created Waze.
And oh, yeah.
He's like three startups after that. I'm like, because he says his big thing, he has a book, Fall in Love with the Solution, Not the Problem.
Yep.
And that's what gets him through it, right? And that seems like what you enjoy.
Mine is, happens to do with a little bit of boredom. I need to be 20 hours a day in my mind thinking about what I'm doing, or I get. And I think that's most, you know, all these entrepreneurs start multiple companies because you love the chase, you know?
Well, where you had the most fun was when it was the idea and from nothing, and like getting people to believe. Like, I feel like, you know, when I'm happiest is when people believe in what I'm doing. Like, yep. They get behind it. They want to, you know, whatever it is, for my buildings. Yes. Like, they love where, you know, what we're doing, how we're doing it, the new collaborative spaces, all the things that we do that create energy now around the workplace. That's what we want to see people doing. You're doing it with fashion. It must be fun too to have, because what's different between, you know, all these ambassadors are all over the place for all these products now on Instagram, and you never know who really is in what and why. With you, it looks like these are real partners. Like,
well, that's a huge difference. Ambassadors don't really do anything anymore, because everyone knows they're just being paid, right? They're just there that day. And
it's
then
good
the next...
for awareness though, right? Because you can see something maybe
it's
you
good
wouldn't
for, No, it is good for awareness, but yeah. Consumers are so, they're kind of sick of it. Like tomorrow, you know, I'll make it up. Like you hear tomorrow, Joe Montana sponsoring, like you hear it every day, every single day. So being a true founder, like involved, is a difference. And that's why we're very clear that these guys are founders. They are not ambassadors. And we will have our own ambassadors. Like we brought on a guy who's going to, Blake Corum, who's hopefully going to win the Heisman this year. So we're still doing ambassadors, but it's different than founders.
No, I just watched Johnny Football. I don't know if you watched that Netflix movie with that
football
player that rose to fame.
Manziel?
Yeah.
Well, I do want to watch that. I heard it's pretty good. Yeah.
These documentaries are great. All right. So, you know, thank you so much for doing this. I mean, your story, it's so exciting and energetic, and people need to hear it, because what I love about it, you know, start something on the side, like, you know, like do what you got to do to keep yourself motivated. You obviously do your job, but like that, and it could always end up just being a hobby anyway. It doesn't matter, but at least you're trying to be creative and doing new things. Greatness Wins. When do you think that, you know, we're going to have a store somewhere you can actually go try this on? Because obviously, you know that that's so powerful.
Yep. Probably the end of next year. We're going slow right now intentionally because of the environment. It's, you know, it's not an optimal environment to launch a business in.
Yeah.
But we're having a lot of success in the wholesale business, in the golf world, and in this corporate world. So we're, I would think by the end of next year, after we've launched women's, we'll open our first brick and mortar.
Well, everyone's going to be looking forward to watching your next journey of this this selection, this different brand in a different category. What's good is you have some things that you know work, but you're going to learn a whole bunch of things in almost a new industry, right? It's a whole different customers. It's everything's new. But thanks for being on the podcast. I appreciate it. Your story is amazing, and everyone's going to get a lot out of this.
No problem. I really appreciate you having me.
Hi, John Schultz here. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. Would really appreciate it if you would like, comment, subscribe, and share with your friends. Looking forward to being with you soon.